Okay, everybody get a lesson sheet. Before I forget it, I want to make sure that you get a lesson for next week, which is back there on that little stand back there at the back of the building. So be sure to pick one of these up before you leave for today, because I know next week that Dean is going to be vicious when he starts teaching this next section of Leviticus. So we want to be ready. Okay, we've had some interesting studies so far in this book. It's kind of a book that kind of knocks you down a little bit. Seems like it's negative all the time, but there's a lot of really nice lessons and positive lessons that we can get from studying this book. It's not that long. Hope everybody had a chance to study our lesson a little bit. What is a vow? Anybody have a definition for a vow? I'm sorry?
Pledge.
Okay, pledge. I'm sorry?
Promise.
Oh, promise. Yes, thank you. I think I mentioned this last week, and I'm very sorry. My dog ate one of my hearing aids. And then I took it down to get it replaced or repaired. And the lady said, "You got to be kidding me." So anyway, I was relegated to one hearing aid. Happens to be on the good side. So the bad side is over here. And so I'm stuck. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd appreciate it if you'd speak up a little bit, because I'm having a hard time hearing. So, you don't have to yell, but if you just speak up, I appreciate it. But I haven't spoken to my dog since then. Okay, we have a promise, a pledge. What else do we have? Is it about her?
Well, I think it should be a little more than that, because you're vowing to God for something. It's not like I'm saying, I'll be over to your house at 5 o'clock and you don't make it until 7. It's not that sort of thing, but it's a vow to God that you will dedicate something or do something or not do something.
Okay. Anybody else have any?
How about an oath?
Oath. Okay. That's in there. Dean?
When we think about it, sometimes we think about it in terms of courts, where we swear that we will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That in many ways is a vow.
Okay, that a vow is really kind of intermixed with all these other things, a promise. You swear to something that it's truth, or that you will accomplish whatever you're doing. A promise is in there, oath is in there, but there's a little subtle difference between a vow and these other things. What Carol hit right on, it's God involved in it, where a promise or a contract or a pledge, an oath, is mankind is in there. A vow is God in it. That's in front of God. So that's really what the difference is that I found in my study of these words. But even in scripture, they are still intertwined, aren't they? One translation you'll find, it says the promise. Oath you find in there. So it kind of gets muddied up a little bit, but the vow is really a promise made to God. In our questionnaire today, first question is, what is the sacrifice of fools. That's found in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Anybody want to read that by chance? Different variations here in different translations as well, but means the same thing. Just verse 1.
Yeah. Okay. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil.
Okay. Anybody have any comments? Ted?
When I read that verse, it makes me think of Cain and Abel, where Abel was offering the sacrifice that God asked for. Cain was not. Cain decided he wanted to offer what he had, not what God asked for. And he got upset when that sacrifice was not accepted by God. And God warned him about that, warned him about his attitude. That's a sacrifice of fools. That's somebody doing something they think God wants when it's not what God asked for. Doing something that was not asked.
Okay.
The contemporary English version casts this in a little bit different light. He says, be careful what you do when you enter the house of God. Fools go there to offer sacrifices, but all they do is sin. Best just to listen when you go to worship. Don't make a promise to God unless you intend to keep it. This is the serious issue. A fool makes a promise without intending to keep it. But that's not what we ought to be doing when we come to the house of God.
What does James tell us? James 4, verse 10. Somebody like to read that? James 4, verse 10.
Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, he will exalt you.
Okay, be humble in the presence of the Lord. Approach the Lord. Be humble when you're doing it. But sacrifice of fools, one of those things somebody makes a mindless offering, not sincere, not humble. Remember that the people used to go and offer prayers. I think my stomach is growling. Can you hear that? That's my microphone. It's right there. Sorry about that. But it's a mindless sacrifice. No sincerity in there is. And so they're foolish when they make a sacrifice and it doesn't come from the heart.
It can be even worse than that, because the Jew not wanting to make a vow because they didn't want to offend God, they fooled the other people into believing that they made a vow on the gold of the temple or the altar or whatever. They didn't make a vow to God. They made a vow to something that the person thought would be holy so that they could break it. And that's even worse than, you know, making a vow and then not keeping it because you just didn't plan right.
It brings to remembrance to me about the rich man who stood on the corner, the Pharisee, stood on the corner and offered his prayer in front of people to impress people. But the poor old guy that had nothing just said, forgive me, Father, I'm a sinner. Which do you think God heard? Kind of easy to figure that out, isn't it? Isn't that what vain worship is? You go to service, and I hope that we don't find ourselves doing this. Do we come to services and offer vain worship? We come to services what for? Do we come with a sincere heart? Do we come here looking forward to spending an hour or two with the Lord and studying songs, prayer, taking of the Lord's table? Is that sincere worship for us? We need to look at ourselves here, don't we? We need to see what our motive is of being here. And we need to apply it and don't make sure that we don't end up making sacrifices as the fool in. Let's look at question number two. Does God expect us to keep our promises when they were rashly made? Think God expects us to keep our vows and promises if they were rashly made? Dean?
Jephthah sacrificed his daughter, made a stupid promise to God. Whatever comes out of my house when I get there, I'll give that to you. His daughter was what came out of his house. And there's no indication that I can see that Jephthah said, oh, it was rash. I didn't mean it, so I'm not going to do it. I think the lesson to learn from that is don't make rash promises. But God expects us to keep them when we say that. You know, it's said all the time, there are no atheists in foxholes. A lot of promises that are made to God in foxholes. God holds us to that.
Anybody else? You think God expects us to keep our promises, even though they are rashly made? Margaret?
What came to my mind was how often parents say something to their children, you do that again, and never follow through.
Okay. As Dean mentioned, Jephthah, I think he was the first judge of Israel, if I remember right, made a rash promise. God, didn't he? He was so excited, he was asking for God's help to defeat the enemies that they had and promised he would sacrifice the first thing that came through the door, and his daughter came through the door. Did Jephthah follow through on his promise? Remember the story? Daughter asked for a period of time to mourn before Jephthah followed through on his promise. She knew it was coming. And she knew that Jephthah had to follow through on his promise to God. But I think it not only destroyed her life, it destroyed Jephthah's life, I'm sure. I don't think he probably ever recovered from such a tragedy. And so we can apply these things to us today. May not be, you know, going to sacrifice our son or daughter or something like that, but we can get caught in this trap, can't we? Dean?
You know, I think there's a tremendous lesson here. Keeping our promises doesn't insulate us from the evil that sometimes happens. We keep our promise, and sometimes evil still happens, and it happens in marriages. You know, you make a promise that you're going to be one with this person, and sometimes that turns out to be not what you expected. You still made that promise. So it's swearing to our hurt, and we don't get to walk out on that.
That's right. You make it work somehow.
That's
even
right.
If it's just on your end, you've got to keep your promises. It's, you know, when you look at this, it's very difficult sometimes to And you may have good intentions, like Dean mentions, you know, and it turns out not to be the right choice, but you make these promises, and they're for good, and sometimes they don't turn out that way, right? And not only in marriages, which seems to be rampant anymore. Well, let's live together for a year, and then if we decide to get married, then that might be a good workout. You can get into a lot of trouble there. Carol?
Yeah. I just wanted to say that God always does what's good for you. So even though Jephthah was trapped in this promise that he made, this vow, and his only daughter is never going to give him grandchildren, and his name wouldn't have continued anyway, but he's not going to have the grandchildren. But that doesn't mean that God didn't bless them or bless her in another way with the closeness to God and with a good life. We think about this as the ending of the story, just the beginning of her life, and God certainly had the ability to bless her in many other ways.
Yeah, I'm sure that God, made things workable, but had a sad story for us to read. And it's there for a reason why, for us, and we can look at this just an example. What about in Mark 6? You remember in Mark 6, Herod Antipas was the king, and he was married to his brother's wife, Philip. Her name was Herodias. And Herod had put John the Baptist in prison. And he enjoyed talking with John the Baptist. He respected John the Baptist. I think he kind of liked him. He had a lot of respect for John the Baptist. But he was married to his brother's wife, or had taken his brother's wife. And Herodias was her name. She had a daughter. And he was entertaining some of his friends and political associates. And he asked her to dance for him. Remember, she came out and danced. And it pleased Herod. So he said, well, I'll give you as much as half my kingdom as a reward. So she ran to her mother. And her mother said, ask for John the Baptist's head on the platter. Because John the Baptist had made derogatory remarks about her and her living with Herod, and while married to this Herod's brother, Philip. So he had made a rash promise. He didn't want to do this. But it turned out to be bad for John the Baptist, didn't it? Because he said immediately he wanted to keep his vow that he had made in front of all these people. And so the next thing you know, John the Baptist's head came in on a platter. So it's another one of those things that shows the effect of a rash vow. Let's read Proverbs 20 and 25. Proverbs 20, 25. In general there, what does that say about promises?
It is a snare for a man to say rashly, it is holy, and after the vows to make inquiry.
Okay. Anybody else? Ask any questions? Comment? It says making rash promises leads us to a trap, doesn't it? And that we've seen just a couple of examples, and there are other examples throughout the Bible. Another question number 3. what is the advantage of using few words? I'm sorry?
Does it help you listen better? I mean, I would think that you would be a better listener and learn more rather than always give your opinion and speak.
Less words that you speak, less chance you have of making some dumb mistakes. You know, perhaps costing us a lot more than we had planned for. Dane?
Yeah, I think that if we do more listening and less talking, first of all, we're less likely to get in trouble. That's coming from a married man. But in our workplace, wherever it is, when we're talking about God, we need, I think it's not necessarily referring to just sitting here and listening, but being open with our heart and our mind to receive the word of God and to let it make those changes in us. But we have this tendency to need gratification from those around us, so we make these bold statements. I promise I'm going to, I will do this, I will do that. We're told that our yes be yes and our no to be no, not to make those promises and vows, because we're held to them. So maybe sit on it just a little bit and let the effects that God's word has in us be shown through our actions and not through what comes out of our mouth.
I'm not known as a person of fewer words, unfortunately, sometimes. It gets me into trouble. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, I was going to say that if there's a verse that talks about what person doesn't count the cost, and if the army is coming with 10,000 and you only have 5,000, you know, you sometimes need to listen in order to count the cost before you open up your mouth and say something that you shouldn't. I'm sure that when the Philistines tricked Samson into telling the answer to the riddle, that they didn't think he was going to fulfill the vow of the clothing for every wedding party by going and killing everybody and giving them a Philistine's outfit from a dead Philistine. And so just because you're coming out on top of something doesn't necessarily mean you come out on top of something.
When you have children, and most of us have had children, have children, remember when you were a young parent, even when you worked or when you were a teenager, you go to your mom and say, can I borrow the car tonight? I've got this beautiful woman and I'm going to take her out on a date. Well, I promise to be back by 11 o'clock. I promise. You just let me have the car. I'll be careful. I promise I'll be back. You ever heard that? Yeah, I used to pull that stunt all the time. Most of the time, my dad saw right through it. Said no. But I learned one lesson there that from one of my older brothers, and that is if you borrowed the car and you drove it all the way around the place, be sure and fill the gas tank up before you got home. It would guarantee that you would get the chance to borrow it the next time. John, my brother John, he'd buy it, he'd run that gas tank dry and bring it home dry. But I learned a lesson early not to do that. But you find this all the time. You know, even the kids say, oh, I promise I'll do this. But it's kind of a shallow promise most of the time. And we need to learn to get away from something like that. Remember Solomon in Proverbs, the 17th chapter. He says that the man who has and uses just a few words is a man of knowledge. I would call it a man who's smart. It says that even the fool is considered okay as long as he keeps his mouth shut. And so Solomon was a wise man and has written some interesting things for the study. He was a foolish man in some respect as well, but he's given us a lot of wonderful information. Proverbs 10:19 says, a man who says little is smart, but the one who says a lot is going to transgress. He's going to fall into a trap, isn't he? Back in Proverbs 6 chapter, he also says that you can be snared by the words from your mouth. Let's look at question number 5. Question number 4 in this lesson. Must we keep the promises that were made by mistake or deception? If someone deceived us, and we made a promise based on that deceit, are we expected to follow through on our promise? Even though it was made to fool us? Yes, Ted.
Isn't that what the Israelites did with the Gibeonites? They were told to wipe out everybody, but they disguised themselves and came in and said, you know, we've been traveling with our moldy bread, we've from far off, and just vow that you won't hurt us. And they happened to be people who live in the land. They had heard that Israel was destroying Albany. And so they made a vow that they would not hurt them. And they were a thorn in their side from then on out.
But they kept the vow.
They did.
They kept the promise that they made. They made a treaty with them. And they kept it. So, I mean, my conclusion from that is, If you're fraudulently induced to make a promise, if you make the promise, you still have to keep it. The fraud is not your sin. The fraud is what obtains for another person, and they answer for the fraud. But you answer for the promise that you made.
Have we been caught up in that type of thing today? We hear all these advertisements. You see all these wonderful miracle drugs and all this equipment like that offered. How many of us fall into that crap? Yeah.
Just bring the story I read yesterday. There was a golf tournament, and the advertisement was, if you hit a hole in one, you win this brand new $90,000 Mercedes. There was fine print in there that said, if you're a professional golfer, you don't qualify. So the lady who hit the hole in one on the 11th hole was an amateur golfer, not a professional golfer, but had been a professional golfer from 94 to 96 or something like that. And so when she went to go to collect her prize, they said, well, you don't qualify because you were a professional all the time. She is currently registered as an amateur golfer. But then we have this idea of who broke the promise here. She signed up saying that she wasn't a professional because she's not now. But they advertised that if you don't qualify, you're going to win as long as you're not a professional. So there's a lot going on there right now.
Well, okay. We can be prudent, can't we, in making our decision to make a vow or make a promise. We can check out the details before we commit ourselves. And like the Gibeonites so many years ago, they knew they didn't have a chance, and everybody was being destroyed. They didn't get away scot-free. They paid a penalty for their deception because they became virtual slaves to the Israelites. They had to carry wood, chop wood, draw water, and so forth like that. So they had to do the menial task. But they got away with keeping their lives. Yes, Steve.
You know, the one that gets me is when I make a promise that I'm going to do something and then circumstances change and I no longer have the ability to do that. What do I do then? It better to not make a promise, but understanding that abilities can change. It's like he said in James. You said today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a city, we'll buy and sell and get gain. You should say, if it's God's will, we'll go into this city and we'll buy and sell and get gain. But understand that circumstances sometimes change. And you don't want to be in the position of being held to a promise that you can't keep. And I think that's the, in my mind, that's how this relates to what we've been saying all along. Some things are empty. Some things are vanity. Making promises is empty. It won't relieve the notion that good people suffer and wicked people prosper. Keeping promises won't relieve that. Keeping promises has a purpose, yes, but it won't relieve its vanity. It won't get you there. It won't resolve that conflict.
We have an yes, Carol.
An example of that were the 40 men who said they weren't gonna eat until they killed Paul on the way down to Jerusalem, or from Jerusalem to where he was being tried, and then he went to Rome. And I mean, they either starved to death or had to say, I can't do this. I mean, there's no way.
So, you're talking about when Paul was under arrest?
They made a vow.
And they swore an oath to, they were going to, weren't going to eat or drink till they kill Paul. You think that the people that, and Paul was in jail at the time, do you think the jailer or the centurion took the threat seriously?
There's a couple of comments from Leslie that she put on the chat. She said, if you make a promise, you have to keep it. People will believe in you the more you make the promise to keep it. And then she said, if you know you can't keep a promise, then don't make it.
Okay. You can build trust that way, can't you, when you keep the promises that you made? It takes a while sometimes. Yeah, in the business world, you know, if you make a commitment, then you're going to need to follow through on that commitment, even though it may turn out to be a mistake, but it lends credence to your reputation, doesn't it? I remember Paul, they take him seriously with this oath. Eventually they did. They sent 470 troopers to escort him to Caesarea. So they did take it seriously, didn't they? Wonder if those guys ever got a meal. I know that the Jews back in those days, the ruling party, people there in the synagogue, they had a way of twisting those things so that they can get out of those oaths. If they figured that they had made a mistake, then they could kind of twist it around to where they could manage to get out. What about the 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and verse 6 through 8, we find that Paul is chastising the Corinthians about taking brother to brother to court, and that in front of unbelievers. So apparently they had problems right there, didn't they? They were taking their own brethren to court to settle their differences. So Paul is bringing this up, isn't he? 1 Corinthians. So just telling us again, if you don't want to stray and forget to keep the promises that you made. Matthew, remember Matthew 5, Jesus had just gotten through talking about the Beatitudes. He used a Sermon on the Mount. And someone asked him about oaths. Jesus said, don't even make one. Just keep it a simple yes or no. Think that's probably what we should do in most circumstances. Yeah. Just keep what you owe, or keep your word, what you say. Your word, and to pay what you owe, and to just say yes, yes, no, no. Jesus teaches us that we should be so true to our word that the need of promises or oaths disappear. So if we keep our word, if we're honest, we're sincere, trust will come from that moment. So there's some good lessons here in this fifth chapter of Ecclesiastes. We're going to run out of time here for just a second. So just as a reminder, be sure to pick up a lesson sheet for next week. Dean will be back up here, and
Wisdom Part 1.
Tough subject. We all think we're full of wisdom. But. Dean?
Well, just in closing, I mean, I think if we just keep things in at the basis, so love God and then love our neighbor. If we strive each and every day just to serve God and to do the best that we can, we aren't going to be the kind of person that has to make a promise. Who has to make a promise to you? That's the person that continually fails. So that reliably unreliable person is going to feel the need to stand in front of you and promise that they will fulfill this thing. If you're the kind of person that is true to your word, you strive each and every day to do the best of your ability to serve God and to serve your brother, then there's no reason to make those promises. And God calls you a fool for making those promises. You make those promises because you're trying to make somebody believe in you, when in fact it just takes the constant, positive, moving forward actions in life, putting others before yourself. Then this is the moot point. You just serve God to the best of your ability.
And we have situations arise every day, and we just need to be sincere and honest in our dealings with others, and always keep in mind that we're being watched, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but God is aware of what we're trying to do and how we're doing it. And we want to certainly please him more than anything else, don't we? So it's just a simple thing to do, and it takes a lot of strain and worry off of it. You know, and I remember well, you know, if you lie, you don't tell the truth, sometime or other it's going to come back and haunt you. Or you got to tell another lie to cover for this lie. And it just goes on and on and on. So we can just do what God asks. And he's sincere in dealing with ourselves and others and our worship to the Lord. Thank you so much for spending some time and with us and for your comments. We'll take a break. Thank you.